Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. Perhaps because our seminarian Roman was in this week, he's heading back today, so please keep him in your prayers for safe travels. But perhaps because he was in this week, I started thinking about my own first year of seminary, which was some time ago. I went to seminary with Fred Flintstone, you know. So whenever I started, I actually, in my first two semesters, did not have a whole lot to do. I tested out of a few classes and had a light workload, and it's probably the most free time I've ever had in my life. And I decided as part of that, since we lived on 1,200 acres of forest, that I would take up wood carving. You can tell that I did not grow skilled at wood carving because you don't see any of my works donated to the church. But I did my best with rubber mallet and chisel and knife and made a few things that were okay. But one of the things that I learned, especially when you're working with wood that you just get from a forest as opposed to cured wood that you can buy, say, at an art store, is that when carving wood, you need to carve against the grain. Because if you carve with the grain, your chisel will move much more quickly, but you're also likely to split the wood or chop off things, including parts of yourself. And in fact, that happened to me when I was making about an 18-inch statue of St. John the Baptist. I had no other choice, I thought, but to carve downward to get his nose right. And I hit a weak spot in the wood going with the grain, cut through his nose and straight into my knee, and I got to see all the tendons of my knee and everything. It was quite delightful. Okay. I thought about that today, that reality that to find the beauty in the wood, you had to carve against the grain. Whenever I thought about this first reading, in days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest mountain. All nations shall stream toward it. Well, I know we're pretty flat here in Louisiana, but you know that rivers do not stream uphill. Okay? They always stream downhill. If you're streaming up, you're going against the grain. And spending the past week and a half in places that were certainly not flat like Louisiana, I can tell you that going up is against my grain. I just want to be very clear about that too. It was not pleasant. And yet I did it. I did it there. Why? I walked out into cold rain and climbed mountains and all these things. Why? Because there was a beauty at the end of the journey. Whether it was the beauty of the Grand Canyon, or the beauty of the Painted Desert, or the beauty of astronomy, or the beauty of the Spanish missions, there was a beauty at the end of the journey. The same beauty that I was searching for whenever I carved against the grain in the wood. The same beauty that requires us to cut against the grain in our own souls. And in fact, this is so much what Advent is about. It is this time, certainly, of beauty, this time of loveliness, this time of expectation and hope and desire, this time of warmth in the midst of winter. And yet it is also a time of penance, of self-denial, of conversion. Why? Because the Lord is never found by sliding down the mountain. To meet him, we must climb. To meet him, we must cut against the grain. To meet him, we must act contrary to our impulses and desires. Not all the time. Life doesn't have to be misery. But the simple reality is that our natural inclination is always to rest, always to indulgence, always to follow our impulses, always to give in to our emotions. And in doing those things, you can never find the beauty of the Lord. To find him, to know him, to see him, to taste him, to know his loveliness, to experience his glory, to be shaken by his majesty, to see his light, to experience his beauty. A beauty such as the world cannot give, a beauty that fulfills the human heart, a beauty that elevates the human mind, a beauty that transforms our soul to see His beauty. We have to cut against the grain. We have to cut against the grain. And that's what Advent's all about. It can be tempting to think that Advent is about materialism and about gluttony and drunkenness and indulgence, since that's what everybody else does, because they have no sense of the beauty at the end of the journey. I'm going to promise you something right now about myself. If I had no clue that there was something beautiful uphill, I would always walk downhill. Okay, I just want to be clear about that. And if we have no glimmer, no glimpse, no sense of the majesty that awaits us when we flow uphill instead of sliding down it, then we'll just follow our inclinations and go down to the lowest denominator. We'll give in to our base impulses, as they call them. Base exactly because they take us lower. During this Advent season, dear brothers and sisters, I want to talk about beauty, which, as you know, is a big word for me, but is also a core word at the heart of what it means to have a prayer life, at the heart of what it means to be a mystic, at the heart of what it means to develop contemplative prayer. And that's where we're going to be going in this Advent season, to seek the highest kind of prayer, which is nothing other than encountering God Himself. The prayer that is a share already on this earth of heaven, of the beatific vision, of seeing God in all of His rapturous beauty. And to do that, we have to cut against the grain. So as I've encouraged you before, I encourage you again this year during this Advent season to take up certain spiritual disciplines, certain practices. I have mentioned in the past, and I think this continues to be the case, that Advent's penance looks different than Lent's because it has a different goal. Lent is a sharing in the cross of Christ so that we might rise with Him from the dead. That happens throughout our life. That never changes. That is something that is always part of us. But Advent makes that look a little bit different. For Advent, the themes, the rhythm changes, where now it is about denying ourselves to increase our hunger so that we might share in the feast of the Lord on Christmas Day. Denying ourselves so that we might blot out this world, so that we might see the light of Christ on Christmas Day. And so the kinds of penances that I recommend to people, I mean, do whatever you want, but the kinds of penances that I recommend to people during these times are penances of light and darkness, of waking up before the dawn, of maybe only praying by a single candlelight. I've told you before, one thing that a family did in one of my old parishes that really moved me is every night during Advent they had family dinner. And every night they turned off all the lights in the house and they only ate by the light of the Advent wreath. So that as Advent progressed, they lit one more candle, one more candle, one more candle, and they experienced the coming of the light very profoundly. And I think penances of silence and sound, penances of driving in silence, of spending time in silence during the day, of removing certain, you know, distractions from your life, and maybe listening to certain things like homilies or podcasts on the scriptures or Christmas music or Advent music or whatever, right? Things of experience where we darken our mind to this world as the whole world darkens and enlighten it with Christ. One thing that I'm going to encourage people to do this year that I will explain next weekend, but I want to tell you now so that you can get a start on it, would be that I encourage people to devote themselves this Advent to some serious engagement with beauty, whether it be reading classical works of literature, watching plays or opera, studying classical films, studying art, getting a telescope and studying astronomy. You can't do that today, but you know it's possible on other days of the year. Something that requires effort to appreciate. Not something that's a slog, not something that's boring, not something that you'll resent, but something that you know is worthwhile and beautiful and good, but you've been putting off because you know that to get that appreciation requires dedication, requires an active effort. And again, we'll talk about that more next week, but I think that that is a good thing to do during this Advent season, and it is something that I myself will be doing. But mostly I want you to hear that the beauty of God is like the dawning of the light, as we hear in the second reading, that it captures our hearts, that it's siren call, that it's really trumpet call. Hearkens to us and says, wake up, throw off the blankets, throw off the works of darkness, rise up and put on the works of light, dedicate yourself to daylight because it is beautiful. And the beauty of God is eruptive in our life. It erupts in our hearts. It's not simply something where we have to check off boxes to be good boys or girls. It captivates us. And if only we've known that, if only we've sensed that, and if only we remember that, every little sacrifice to see it again is as nothing. Is as nothing. And that's what Advent is all about. God bless you all.